tonight, Glenn Steckling is going to be talking about UFOs, ETs, and other cosmic mysteries. We'll be right back. Grab your popcorn and snacks. Find a comfy spot, take a seat or lie down, and let me transport you to a place of fantasy, ghost stories, ancient legends, odd creatures, alien encounters, and other magical topics. You may even decide to join the conversation. From faraway lands to your own backyard, with a small dash of pixie dust, turn out the lights and open your minds. The journey is about to begin. Hey everybody, how's it going? Welcome to California Haunts Radio. My name is Charlotte. I'm going to be your host for the next hour. I'm also the owner of the California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team, based out of sunny Sacramento, California. We are 45 strong up and down the state, which means if you have a paranormal need or you think you have a paranormal need, we can get to you. It may take us a while, but we'll get to you. And in the case that it does take us a while, we do have mediums on staff who can phone you and talk to you about what may or may not be going on. And in most cases, they can simmer the energy down, unless it's alien or ET or anything like that, but they can simmer the energy down until we can get out there, which usually takes no more than like 2 or 3 days. That being said, if you are watching from Facebook, and this is how you can find us, you can find us all over social media, just Google California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team. Again, that being said, if you guys are watching from Facebook, and a lot of you are tonight, a lot of you are stalking out there, I know you are, I know you're out there for that 20 or 30 or 40 of you that are out there, just kind of out there and where Mario hangs out. That's really cool. Okay, so if you guys are watching on Facebook and you haven't already, please hit that follow button. We're always looking for followers. And during the show, feel free to comment and leave us a thumbs up. Show us some love. Tell us what you think of us. I'm open to everything, okay? So because what that does is that puts us up higher, and Facebook's computers notice us, and they put us up higher, what they call their FYP. And that gets us out to more people. That's what it's all about, right? Being distributed out to more people. If you're watching from YouTube, same thing. Except over YouTube, it can get confusing. I have more than 1,000 videos over there. Each video is a different topic. I'm a journalist, photojournalist, so I like to change it up. So it's not always about UFOs. It's not always about ghosts or anything like that, and cryptids or things like that. There's other stuff on there as well. There's news, news-timed items on there as well. So check it out. Check out the videos over YouTube, and same thing applies today. If you haven't subscribed already, please be sure to do so. Getting closer to that goal. And also feel free to show us some love, show us a thumbs up, things like that. Really appreciate it. And comment in the chat room. Please do. Please come in and comment. Twitch, same thing. I said Twix. The other day I said Twix. I must be hungry, right? Twitch. Twitch works the same way. So does TikTok, for that matter. TikTok works the same way as that. Except with TikTok, you double tap the screen. Okay, that being said, be sure to check out the California Haunts Patreon. We got some really cool stuff going on over there. I think you'll like it. And I also have a store called the Boo Crew Store. And we're starting to sell some merch, t-shirts and stuff for California Haunts Radio. And California Haunts itself, hello Jerry. And yeah, so it should be fun. It's a fun store. We're going to be adding more stuff monthly. All right, my guest tonight has been on the show before. His name is Glenn Steckling, and he has a very interesting background, but we are going to be talking about one of my favorite subjects. We're going to be talking about UFOs, ETs, and the moon, right? We're going to be have a discussion about the moon and what's been going on over there, because I know they found these moon caves very recently, and I've been curious about those, and we'll see if he knows anything about that. But for the meantime, let's bring him on and get the show on the road, and let's enjoy him again. I think this is about his, it may be his third time coming on the show. I don't know. But I think it is. Here we go. Hello, sir.
Hi, Charlotte. How are you doing?
Welcome back. It's good to have you.
It's good to be back. Thank you for the invitation.
For the people who don't know who you are, please tell them.
Well, quite simply, I am the curator, director, CEO and copyright holder of all the Georgia Damski materials, and of course the materials by my own family, the Steckling family. And we have run this organization We were former friends, co-workers, and confidants of George Adamski before he passed away in 1965. And we became the executors of the Adamski Foundation in the early 70s and have run this organization and collected this data and lectured around the world since that time. My parents were invited to go to NASA in Greenbelt, Maryland, NASA Goddard, and also the Pentagon and a select committee of the British House of Lords over the many years and decades in order to present these materials and interact with these officials. And so we have a very long and wide history of communication and service within this field. Interestingly, before I forget, you mentioned that you have over 1,000 videos on YouTube. 2 weeks ago, I got a notification from YouTube that they wiped my channel clean of my 15 videos.
Wow.
No reason given, no ability to appeal, nothing. They just, somebody somewhere out there didn't like what I had to say or have to say, and they wiped it clean. So, since I don't give up that easily, obviously, I used another email address and I reloaded everything, and now I've got the channel back up again, and we'll see how long that lasts. If they do it again, then that it shows that there's purposeful intent to censor anything that we have to show the public.
Right. All it takes is one person to cause it too.
Is it really? Is that really it? So how interesting it is that one dissatisfied person can shut it down, and they do not investigate it or anything like that. They just take their word for it. I mean, that's the strangest form of democracy I've ever seen.
I've been through it. They haven't shut me down completely, but I have been through it for the 7 day thing, over a show I did, and I don't think they were too happy because I pointed out there were like 10 other shows that did the same topic, and they didn't care.
Yeah. So well, there are other mediums as well. It's just YouTube is well known, but
right.
If they try this again, then I may just contact my legal help and see if we can't persuade them in more, in a greater courtroom to see what's going on. But you know, it's a shame that because we have posted videos and films and photos, indisputable. I mean, and that's probably what the problem is. There's so much concentrated proof and authentication there on these programs that somebody must be getting nervous.
Mm-hmm. So, absolutely.
But anyway, so that's basically, you know, what we do and how I go about promoting and spreading this information to the widest avenue that I can. I have several overseas contracts solidified now for the translation and the publication of my latest book. So we're working to get that word around in a global extent as well.
Absolutely. So what's going on that's new in this world that you live in, you know, as far as ET encounters and things like that?
Well, you did mention the moon.
Yes.
And we have a very thorough video on my YouTube channel on the moon. And it goes in through it systematically about all the changes there, some of which you mentioned, and a lot of photographs that are showing activity in the moon. Basically, we are teaching our children and promoting age-old, decades-old information, or what you would call misinformation, concerning the conditions on the moon. It is provable that the moon has much more than 1/6 gravity, and that is by the very proof that was provided by our missions to the moon and the location of the neutral gravity point, or the gravity influential point between the moon and the Earth, as you also said, the lunar caves, but they also found lunar caves that are holding a constant temperature of 63 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wow.
All this information that I'm giving is not hearsay, it's not innuendo, it is not theory. This is all printed, documented, referenceable information that you can find for yourself so that you can back up the, what I'm saying in the thoughts that you have. And those caves which have a constant 63 degrees Fahrenheit, the article describes it as the average temperature of San Francisco, day in and day out, and day out, night and day. And so now you have a very sympathetic temperature, and you have undoubtedly, we have proven beyond any doubt that the moon has a plethora of water, and that water already was discovered in 1971 by our Apollo instrumentation spraying out of the lunar surface like Old Faithful up in Yellowstone. And when you see color photographs of the moon, you will see that there is an immense amount. It's not this just gray body in space. It has color fluctuations of brown and green and blue and all kinds of different colors, which would be also indicative of the different mineral contents and other environmental conditions that are there. So the moon is by no way a dead place. It has a magnetic field. It has earthquakes. It has residual volcanoes. It is not just this lump of coal in space. And we have found that it is the perfect observation and launching point for any type of extraterrestrial vehicles that may come here to visit our planet, and they've been doing so for tens of thousands of years, and that they are lunar bases, not only bases by other civilizations, but by our own military installations as well. Project Rainbow was mentioned by Colonel Curacao, and that was developed between 1957 and 1967, with the base being complete and manned in 1967. So this beautiful, public relations program, which the astronauts were not complicit with. Many of them had no idea what was going on, and they were terribly upset when they got there and found out that not only were we, others, not only there, but we were there already before they got there. And so so when you take a telescope and you train it on places like the Straith Wall, the Alpine Valley, the Gassendi Crater, Aristocris, Archimedes, things like that, and you watch for a period of time, you may have the ability to see these crafts in motion across the lunar surface. And when you go into our YouTube video and you look at the photographs, there are a two-part series of photographs of George Adamski. The first series of them were taken of the moon, showing exactly this kind of activity. And then when you go into the video of our book, Alien Bases on the Moon, you will see the same kind of photographs that NASA took during the many space missions that we went to the moon. So all is not like it is being perpetrated.
When you say that we have been there before, is that via, like probes, or are we talking we physically have been there before the astronauts were there?
Physically. Okay. We transported our own select people to our, initially they were experimental bases, but then as we became more acclimated to the conditions on the moon, the adjusted conditions, and we constructed some honeycomb bases, both not only on the surface, but of course, I think part of it is going to be underground as well, in order to protect the environment from the extra radiation that is coming from the sun. Because while the moon has a very thin atmosphere, it doesn't have the same type of density that we do that works as a filter for solar radiation on our planet.
Okay. Now, that brings up the question of, as you said, there have been probably ETs landing there to observe, to observe Earth from over there, and plus being able to, you know, take off from there for refueling or whatever they're doing over there. So does that mean, in a sort of way, that with us being there as well, we've been working in consort, we have agreements with these ETs to share the moon, or what do you think that means?
Yeah. The lunar bodies that are around each planet are considered to be the territory of that particular body. So, for instance, mm-hmm. the two moons of Mars, which are artificial, and the many moons of Jupiter and Saturn, and the other planets, in regularity, usually mm-hmm. there is more than one moon. But in our case, the moon is a neutral free zone where we can go and they can go, and to some extent we may share complexes, or at least share the ability to transverse back and forth and visit and learn certain things and whatever. So there's mm-hmm. a whole secondary and trinary circle of events and cooperations that are going on outside the realm of our visibility. Remember that the moon is lit on both sides, the front and the back, each on a 14-day cycle. So when you look out there and look at the moon, you're seeing the front side of the moon, and it takes 14 days for it to go from crescent to full moon to dark again. And when that goes to dark, then the back side of the moon is lit up for 14 days in the same type of a cycle. So this idea that one side is totally lit and the other side is totally dark is just a fallacy of ignorance that we haven't bothered. And you can look this up. Heck, you can go to Wikipedia and look that up and see that for yourself. Once again, the conditions are quite different than what the people averagely think about. And I don't think that a lot of people give a lot of thought to this subject simply because they feel that it doesn't concern them or has no ramifications to their daily existence or whatever. So we have a certain amount of psychological disconnect from things when we wish to ignore them.
Well, I mean, it kind of explains itself. Like it's kind of like a lunar eclipse.
Yeah, that's exactly the way it's
lit up. Except, what is it? Is it the Earth that's completely, the Earth's shadow is completely covering it instead of doing a partial cover?
Because the Earth rotates, the Moon is fixed in that. But eventually, as mm-hmm. that comes around, and the Sun is in the distance. So, you know, if you have that rotation, eventually, as the Earth rotates and the Moon remains fixed, it moves into a position where the Sun now is behind it, and it lights up the other side. So it's nothing more than, you know, astrodynamics.
Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense. I remember growing up, I'm not going to tell people how old I am, I'm old. I'm old enough not to be able to see the comments over here, clearly that's how old I am. And I remember that as I was growing up, when I was small, they were just, the Apollo astronauts were just going to the moon. But I remember even in the 70s, you know, getting books that still were saying that we haven't gone to the moon yet. Nothing had caught up.
Well, yeah, nothing, of course, because there's a, you know, often a generational lag, 25-year lag mm-hmm. in what we print and what we teach. This is due to the academic structure of our system, because mm-hmm. of course these people become so-called professors and experts, which is an impossible thing to do, to be an expert in anything, because the conditions are changing constantly. So there's mm-hmm. nothing you can be an expert of. You can only be an observer, and so the universities require their, you know, academic staff to print on a regular basis in order to keep their facilities and their funding and their reputations going. So basically, you get the recycling of information, because we're based on a system where everybody goes backwards to look at what somebody else has said before mm-hmm. you can say it too. And I always argued with the academics and said, well, don't you have an individual thought of your own? do you have to always, you know, it's like the legal system. We can't decide on this case unless there's a precedent. Well, somebody had to be the first one to make the decision without a precedent. What's the difference?
Yeah. And then so, I was just thinking, go ahead.
And so we discovered that the increase in gravity is about 60% of Earth. And it's a very simple calculation. It's on the YouTube video. Anybody can do it. You can pull out your own calculator. Use the same number. You can use the same formula, if you wish, as the Newtonian one. But you have to use the new numbers of how that actually was. So under 1/6 gravity, the moon's neutral gravity point would be 22,000 miles from the moon. But in fact, it's more than double that. And since gravity expands exponentially, that means that at 44,000 miles, you have about a 60% gravity. Well, where's the evidence of that? If you look at astronaut Young, and we show this too, when he was jumping up and down next to the flag, he could only jump 20 centimeters high. As hard as he could jump, and you could see it was full effort jump, then that's because he weighed, about 180 pounds? The backpack, another 200, so that's 380. So if indeed it was 1/6 gravity, he would be able to jump 10 meters high and God knows how many meters forward, but he couldn't because the gravity's too high. Next, they show the section in which the astronauts hit the golf ball. And they said, initially they said, oh yeah, that golf ball went for miles. Well, you look at the picture and you look at the reports and the scientists said, oh no, the first golf ball went for 40 yards. I could do better than that with my 9-iron here. And so we show that there is more gravity. We show that the lunar rover is driving around and this nice rooster tail of dust comes off behind the back wheels and floats to the ground. If we were in a vacuum condition, and that lunar dust would never float to the ground. It would be nothing to draw it down. It would just continue to meander off. And then when the flag is waving, the flag is not waving because it's in a studio, like some fools have tried to infer and confuse the people. It is because there's a solar wind, and the solar wind is a common condition. And not only that, since there is a light atmosphere on the moon in which both NASA and the astronomical societies and many of these people have observed the clouds moving around the moon, mists, colored lights, moving objects. So, you know, if you've got these kind of conditions, that means that you have a certain amount of atmospheric pressure, like we have on Earth, highs and lows that move in condition to the geography itself. So the flag waved because of the outside conditions of the solar winds and the atmospheric variations and differentials. And so we get to see that no matter how harsh the environment we pretend to be, there are always the elements and the constructs of life. Now that we know that there's hydrogen on the moon, that there's oxygen on the moon, now mind you, we're not talking this as a vacation spot like Tahiti, but there are low levels of that, and when you start to put together all these variations, you've got the exact conditions for the development of life. Whether it happens to be microscopic, or whether it happens to be, bushes and density of certain types of lichens and all kinds, but everything starts somewhere, and from there we know that's how life evolved on this planet, and thereby it is using the exact same steps on the other worlds as well. There is a universality. The principles to the development of life, whether it is here on the next planet or across the galaxy on other planets, it is the same fundamentals because all the elements of life, the RNA, the DNA, the organic materials, all those elements come from space and they rain down onto the planet and eventually cause the process upon which life begins to develop. So it's no different anywhere else.
Absolutely. And speaking of life, wasn't there an astronaut who, I guess, live on the live feed actually mentioned seeing aliens off in the distance? Or am I wrong?
Yeah, there was a for a while, the first of all, NASA built a 3 to 5 second delay factor into the communication system so that they had pre-warning of what was being said before it was out live among the general public. But during those days, the ham radio people could tune into the frequencies of which Apollo and Gemini and Atlas and all these other programs used, and they could listen in on what was going on. And in one particular circumstance, it is reported that the astronaut, and I believe it was Armstrong, walked to the edge of the crater and looked over there and said, "My God, guys, look at that. There's others here, and look how big those ships are and what have you." And you could hear Mission Control in the background going, "Switch channels, switch channels. Do not broadcast anymore on this channel."
Wow.
And so I think that, like I said before, many of the military career officers and astronauts were highly impacted by the secrecy that they were not even told or confided in, and what was really there. And so, yeah, this I basically have no doubt. In fact, I think they said that some of these climate caves and tunnels and things like that were very close to the first landing in the Sea of Tranquility. And so, so you know, obviously these boys knew, somebody knew where they were putting down and what they may find there. And I think that some of them, some of the astronauts were deeply affected. And I know that they say that astronaut Armstrong was not ever the same person when he came back than he was before because of that. And some, and a large number of astronauts, people always say, "Oh, well, how come the astronauts don't talk and blah, 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 blah." Well, if you look in my last book, The UFO Reality, Can Truth Prevail? I've got in section 2 a whole quotation area from all the astronauts that have talked and from the scientists who developed the telecommunications system. Marie Chatelain, who wrote a very good book, Our Ancestors Came from Outer Space, he lists every single mission, and every single mission was accompanied either close or far by one or more extraterrestrial spacecraft. And in fact, the astronauts talked about how when they were flying to the moon that they were getting music piped into the command module, music that they had never heard before. So, you know, the secrecy is a very, very tight-knit group. And then, of course, you have those paid and promoted academics and scientists whose sole job is to go out and to negate and try to misinform and deflect these type of facts, hoping that, you know, that that will be sufficient to keep the majority of the people disenfranchised from the actual reports and conditions.
How many alien races do you think, just out of curiosity, I mean, there's got to be thousands and thousands and thousands of alien races, but as far as, like, in our solar system, how many do you think are actually there?
Let us differentiate here right away between two things.
Okay.
There are races of aliens. They are not species of aliens. This is not a Star Wars barroom scene where you have aliens in there with stuff growing out of their head or multiple eyes or all the or all this other funny stuff. This is the haunt of fantasy and science fiction. There are a number of races, just like we have races on this planet. We have, well, according to old records, the 12 tribes of people that are the different races on here. But there are still human beings, and there are still a variation in the size. Some of them are small, 4 feet high. Some of them are taller, just like we have here on this planet, 4 feet high. And then the tallest man is almost 9 feet tall. And the Watusis and things like that, different races around the world. So you have different colors. and you have different heights and different, to some degree, skin tones and variations, but they are still falling within the construct of Homo sapiens and people. They are not, basically it comes down to this, and I've not been the only one to say that, a number of scientists have said this, experts in their field. Human beings, then they have humanoids, robotics, and androids. Those are the four. And I know there are plenty of people out there saying, oh yes, you know, we've seen 150 different species and things like that. And all I can say is that is the biggest bunch of bull I have ever seen, and I know otherwise. There are no manta people. There are no ant people. There are no crayfish people. The Sasquatch is not flying spaceships. If you look at the evolution, if you adhere to the evolution of species, then why aren't any more monkeys coming out of the jungles that look like people?
Right.
They're not. And why is the whale, who has the largest brain on Earth, the sperm whale, much more intelligent than we are, but yet totally confined to the ocean and its environment? It doesn't crawl up on land and start using its flippers to build microcomputers and chips and spaceships. And so this whole fantasy that these animals are suddenly sprouting this new IQ and starting to develop this technology is nothing more than the ignorance of people to the basic conditions of how life formulates and evolves on the planet. It's that simple. The bird isn't, yet the bird is flying through the air better than we can, but yet it can't build something to go into space, and it can't build something to go into the deepest of ocean. And so we really have to pull ourselves back from our unmitigated imagination and actually bother to study some realism. Are they the scientists I have talked to, whether they are astrophysicists or the best ones are the astrochemists, the biological chemistry, because the chemistry person tells you exactly how the cells go together and how they don't. They, the director of the Maryland Chemical Evolutionary Laboratory says there are no silicon people, because the silicon molecule cannot combine and is water soluble, so it will not bind to itself to compose something. But yet, what do you hear? You hear the sci-fi people. Well, if it's not carbon based, it's silicon based. Or they basically have zero knowledge, and all they do is pull fantasy thoughts out of their minds, because they themselves don't have the knowledge and expertise to say why or why not. So they just think, like a politician, if I say something, it's automatically so, whether it is or not.
Do you think, and as we look at the stories of people being contactees, I'll use that word, do you think that there is a crossbreeding program, or do you think that's all BS too?
No, there's no need to crossbreed anything.
Okay.
What for? Basically, you have, first of all, let's look at this here from just the logical standpoint. You have societies that have developed far past us, many thousands of years past us. They have societies where disease and malfeasance are completely unknown, and not any different than we now live hundreds of years or half a century from the Middle Ages, where the Black Plague roamed free and things like that. And now these things are completely eradicated, and we no longer have to deal with it. In another 500 years, the society won't even remember what these things were, because they were eradicated long ago. In their society, they have eliminated all these different things, like we're working on now, manipulation in order to prevent multiple sclerosis and autism and all these other things, where they find mutations in the genes, which is our fault, not anybody else's. And for them, I would say that they are genetically 1,000 times cleaner than we are. Why would they want to degrade their own chemical base by trying to infuse ours into theirs? That makes absolutely zero sense whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, quick question in the chat room is, what are the four again? You got a human being, humanoid, android, and...
Robotics. Every ship carries a robot. Now, in this case, the robot doesn't have to be looking like a human being. It's looking like a robot looks like. And and so it still has two legs, a body, two arms, and a head, but it doesn't have... Some of them have only a circular telephotic lens or video camera lens in the forehead. They don't have a nose. They don't need to breathe air. Right, so they have robotics that are used in order to go outside the ship in order to recon the environment and what have you. And then the androids look closer to people. If you look if you do some research in Japanese television, it is absolutely amazing the type of robots that they have developed that have facial features and everything. I mean, other than a few joints and things like that, these robots are just as mobile and able as a human being. Mm-hmm. And the and the androids on these ships are used to do the possible danger labor and mechanics. Say something breaks outside the ship, and they're not in a position in which they can land somewhere. So they send the android out of the ship, just like we would an astronaut on an EVA going out in a spacesuit, right? And they go and they repair it, and then they come back, and there's no loss of life, and there's no danger to the human occupants. And I often wonder, when we have such sophistication in robotics as we do now, why are we not using these robotics to fight firefighters and all the dangerous type of work that puts human life at risk? And I can only come up with one answer. The answer is we have so many people that we don't value the basic life itself. We don't value animal or nature life. We prove that all the time. And we don't value people because we think that there's so many of them that that $1 million for a robot is more valuable than a human being they can pull off the street to do it. So we got a whole bunch of stuff that is backwards here on this world because we deal solely on an economic system. Everything has been given down to the minutest thing an economic value. And if somebody says, well, it no longer makes economic sense to have squirrels, then we kill all the squirrels and we don't care about the repercussions of that and the rest of the ecosystem. So it is our commercialism and economic system which is really the self-destroyer of our society. And I'm not talking about being communist or socialist or things like that. I'm talking basically of a system which honors the sanctity of life and honors the creation, because basically all of nature is a reciprocal of God or the creative force. So since that intelligence is much greater than ours, how could we become so self-centered as to decide what has more value than others? And many of the religions say exactly the same thing. So
another question, what are humanoids? That's a good one.
Well, I think to that degree, I have personally not interacted with that. I have only interacted with the robotics and with the human beings. I would have to say that the humanoids are probably those who are still in the upward progression cycle. And so, you know, just like we have had over a period of time variations in the the Homo sapiens, because then you had Neanderthal and then the Homo erectus and all these other ones. These are variations in the evolutionary cycle, and I can only theorize that that may be the same case, but that's all it is. It's my own particular opinion.
Another question I have, because you mentioned this technology that we have with robotics. Do we, because I remember when the space shuttle was flying, used to go out to park on the freeway to watch it come in for landing and stuff at Edwards. And I remember them saying that the technology aboard that thing was just a basic computer, essentially equal to a basic computer like we had back then at the computer levels that we had. You know, those silly Radio Shack, you know, computer things that we had.
It was better than that, because
I was gonna say
the Lockheed L-1011, the TriStar jet,
right,
that came out in the early 70s, I personally flew that airplane. And that that autopilot system was the test bed for the space shuttle. It was the most sophisticated of all the commercial airliners, far surpassing Boeing. Basically, to make the technology short and understandable, the L-1011 could fly down the instrument landing system on autopilot. It could go down all the way to the ground. It could flare. It could land on the wheels, track the center line of the runway, and brake itself to a halt. And that was 1972, 74 technology.
Wow.
And that technology was also duplicated because Lockheed Martin was one of the industrial makers of this particular instrumentation and a lot of this. And so for its time, it was wonderful. But remember, that was built in the 70s. And now the technology, I mean, think of how late those things flew for how many years, and all the technology that changed from 1980 until now. I mean, we've basically, you know, come full cycle into a far more sophisticated realm in which we don't translate that into the usage of our own programs. And so we purposely hold back on things in order to keep a very, very slow, predetermined and exercised process of integration and advancement. So we don't use the best we have. I mean, I know corporate jets, the Gulfstream 650s and the many of the other ones that have far better autopilot and instrumentation technology than any commercial airliner. And you would think, well, why wouldn't you produce the best you can to have the greatest safety margin necessary? And that is because economics. That's why.
That's why I was kind of building to this question where, you know, we went to the moon. It was publicized and all that. Suddenly we stopped going. You know, we got in the space shuttle program, orbiting the Earth and all that good stuff. You know, they have the flying lab and all that. And now they're going back to where they want to go to the moon. So now we've got private contractors doing this stuff. Is it because they, let's put it this way, because you had said we've been to the moon before. So in between these trips to the moon and up to where we are now trying to design this stuff, have they been going and not telling us, do you think?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Apollo 17 was the last of the Apollo missions. It was scrubbed due to political reasons and because they wanted to openly use those funds for an increased defense budget and other things like that. The funny thing is once again, the ignorance of people. Their statement is, well, why do we spend any money going into space? Because we are having so many problems here on Earth. Number one, the return on the technology and development of the space program is a 1-for-4. Every $1 spent, $4 come back in return. That's better than any stock market advancement that you could buy stock-wise anytime, any place. Right? So it is an economic advantage. But the only difference is that it takes the economy away from an oil-based economy, which has now been metamorphosized into a defense industry economy, and that the space economy would wipe out the other ones because you wouldn't have need for all that other garbage. And so space makes you money. Think about how many billions of dollars saved and how many hundreds of thousands of lives saved due to our space program. The weather satellites that track the hurricanes and the storms that you turn on the television and you can watch on real live updates in order to be able to evacuate or tornado conditions and whatever.
Right.
All of this is downstream space technology that has done nothing but serve humanity. So this idea that we're wasting money in space is once again pure ignorance. And so, yes, I would say that, you know, I am not the only one to say that. The Williams Bryant, who in 83 wrote the book Moongate, they also are talking about the fact that we have military missions to the moon that are launched out of equatorial areas on our planet away from prying eyes so that they can reach orbit and effigy without being noticed and have gone off to the moon. And of course, that would make sense to supply our own space stations that are up there. And then there is also the fact that the other side of the development of this downstream extraterrestrial technology has helped us develop non-rocketry type of propulsion, very much like the free energy electromagnetic propulsion, and they are also using these type of craft to go to the moon as well. They don't use it to go to the other planets because that is a different technological beat and step and condition. But back and forth to the moon is not any different than taking, you know, the ferry across the San Francisco Bay to the other side of Seattle. Is that that normal?
I would think so by now. That's why I've been wondering. You see all this stuff, but I'm not going to mention the names because I don't want to get anybody in my face. But you know, you see all this technology out there now that you know they can reland the rocket engines. They can do all this stuff, and then I was just curious with that because I thought we had the technology to go back then. What makes it so different to now?
You know, because we have multiple layers. You have the political and public relations portion of it that worked completely separate from the aerodynamic development of it, like Skunk Works and the SR-71, the 72, the 91, the Aurora. These are still working on some basic aerodynamic principles because we have people who are so infatuated with the fact that you have to have a wing, it has to create lift, there has to be pressure differential, all of that. They can never get away from that standard, so they can never make the next step in technological advancement. And then we have the third, and the third is working solely on the understanding and development of these type of extraterrestrial energy sources as electromagnetic energy, which is free energy. The planet generates it by hundreds of trillions of volts. And so there's no need to have rocket engines and all these other things. It also provides a platform of which the craft is surrounded in a gravitational field. So no matter how fast that craft starts or stops or moves, the people inside feel absolutely no motion. You and I, we're moving through space at 1.3 million miles per hour, and we feel nothing, right? And so, and the people who are living in Argentina, which is technically down towards the bottom of the globe, they're not standing on their heads either. They're standing upright like you and I because the gravity pulls to the center and downwards. And so it makes no difference whether that spacecraft is this way, this way, this way. The one gravity field always pulls to the base, which means that inside you're standing upright no matter the position of the platform itself. And so they have mastered these type of techniques by simply emulating how a planet works itself. That's all they do. They merge with natural principle and natural development. There's no such thing as anti-gravity. There is no such thing as as antimatter. There is no such thing as parallel universes and dimensions. This is all science fiction.
Now, speaking of, did we get this technology ourselves, or did we work with alien races on this to learn this stuff?
I think that it's kind of a combination of the two. Hermann Oberth, who was considered the father of rocketry, one of them, mm-hmm. because the other one was Goddard here in the States. Oberth was in Europe. They once asked him in a 1970s interview, he says, what do you attribute the unbelievable leap in technology and advancement we have mm-hmm. done in less than the last 100 years when we were riding around with horse and buggy? And Oberth said, oh, that's simple. We've had help. And they ask him, who helped you? And he pointed up into the sky and he said, those guys up there. And so I think we have had a combination, you know, we are given a little bit and then we are monitored to see what we do with it. Because the problem is that we have to be watched very closely, because the first thing we do with everything is militarize it mm-hmm. and try to gain ascendancy over our own fellow human beings. And so they give us a little bit to see if we will take another natural step and bring it to the next position. And if we do that peacefully, then we're given a little bit more. But if mm-hmm. we don't, then they say, okay, we're putting a freeze on this because these fools down there aren't ready yet.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of not ready yet, do you ever think that there's going to be openness about the existence of ETs here on Earth?
Only if they can make them hostile.
Okay.
So, in other words, there's no such thing as disclosure. I've said mm-hmm. this for years. Already in 92, I gave a lecture, and one person said to me, well, yeah, the disclosure will be coming out in 6 months. And I said, well, good luck with that, because they've worked hard since the 1950s in order to cover it all up, and they're not about to admit that they have been pulling the wool over your eyes and lying to you, because the next thing you're going to do is say, well, what else have you lied to us about? And how can we trust anything that you say? Because mm-hmm. what you're saying is lies. And so they're not going to open Pandora's box and bring this out. The only way that they will ever admit somewhat to it is if they can put a strategic threat. In other words, the Star Wars program that Reagan wanted to develop was not so much a program to control the trajectory of missiles launched on the surface. It was designed in order to try to prevent extraterrestrial craft from coming here to visit us. Not because mm-hmm. they were a threat, but because they brought something better. And since something better is considered a threat, that's why we tried to push them away. But fortunately, they're so far advanced from us technologically and have been for thousands of years that if they really wanted to, they could do anything they wanted anytime. Mm-hmm. This whole notion that they're aggressive and are warlike and bestial and all this other stuff is all nonsense. They could have done anything they wanted to us for thousands of years while we were running around throwing rocks and shooting arrows at each other. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. I mean, people really, that's another reason I wrote the book, to give some foundational history to say, hey, mm-hmm. look, people, look at what all you've forgotten. Because so many people just basically go on the internet, type something in, and whatever flashes on the screen they take as verbatim, and they don't realize that they need to investigate further into that, because what's on the internet is nothing more than somebody else's opinion that they put out there. And that's what this entire UFO field has become saturated with. Mm-hmm. Nothing but people's opinion. They mm-hmm. don't have any actual experiences. They don't have any actual knowledge. And all they do is opinionate and postulate so that they can appear like being experts in the field. And I, too, can name their names by the dozens, but we'll be nice today.
What do you hope happens?
What do I hope happens? Well, I would like us to be inclusive with our own manifest destiny, because it is our heretical right to join our friends in space. Not any different than at the people who come from one continent to another continent to visit them and to eventually partake of that better life and better world. And and I think that is within our natural yearning as well, to explore our innate curiosity to learn more and to understand. I could care less about what the theoretical is. It means nothing to me. All these people that are, you know, when I turn on the TV, how the universe works. Well, they haven't a damn clue about how the universe works. All they're doing is spouting off. And then everybody says, oh boy, you know, Dr. So-and-so said this and this. Well, since we're not going out into space and to see for ourselves and to record for ourselves honestly and bringing back honest information, then we really don't have a clue of what's going on out there, other just than minute revelations that certain groups keep to themselves.
Absolutely, absolutely. What's next for you, sir?
Well, I'm kind of semi-retired. Like I said, I had the I had that laborious project of trying to reload everything in the videos into the YouTube, and we'll see if they don't come after me again and wipe it clean. Then I'll have to go to another platform like X or Rumble or whatever, or put them individually on my website or what have you. But as far as what is next is, I'm working, like I mentioned, on several, four or five different languages and countries right now globally translating my book and making it available to a larger audience. And usually when that happens, then you start to get inquiries and people like you, you know, that want to have a interview and what have you, and they can talk about it and what have you. So my emphasis remains on an educational program, and one that gives people some actual answers. And I've heard this from others, that a number of the media programs in this particular UFO community do not like my book at all, because it gives definitive answers and they cannot perpetuate mystery when definitive answers are given. Yet definitive answers is what gives you peace of mind. When you know how something works, you can say, okay, I know that, I can move on to the next and not constantly be drawn back to new misinformation that is constantly spouted in there to pull your attention back into something that doesn't do any good. That is why this endless debate in this field is designed to do, to keep people constantly engaged and confused, so that the next question would be the one that you asked: how will we develop and benefit from this information? And and we on this planet, our societies and those who govern these societies, and I'm not talking about these fools in Washington, they're not, you know, I watched the other day when they asked Trump, you know, if you become president, would you release the UFO information? And he said, sure. And what people don't know is he doesn't have access. Hillary said the same thing. Bill said the same thing. Obama said the same thing. There hasn't been a president that had full access since John Kennedy. And they will tell, and they tell them that the CIA who controls these files tells them they don't have the authority to be briefed or to look at these files. Period. That's it. So this hierarchy of government that we have been taught to believe in due to our Constitution and so-called democracy, which in reality we were developed as a republic, just like the Greeks. And so, you know, that doesn't mean anything. These people can't tell you a word. They don't have access. It's nothing more than a ploy to get you to vote.
Absolutely. How can people find you, sir?
Well, They can find me right now on YouTube again. They can find me on my website, Adamski Foundation, one word, .com. We have a pretty thorough website. My books are available through blurb.com, blurb.com. They're the publishers, so they publish each book to order. They set the price, and they send it out to you. I have no input into that. We recently put another copy of that on blurb.com to be made available through Amazon and online bookstores. But the amazing thing is that that price is $20 more expensive than the ones that if you order directly from Blurb. So I guess Bezos needs another 400-foot yacht. And so they basically take a 100% profit off of somebody else's work. So you can find it there. You can find it some of it on Amazon. You can find some of it on ABE.com. I believe that's a Canadian company. And also on eBay. I make some of it available for there. So that's... And if you type in my name in YouTube, you will find other programs that I've done with other hosts and situations that they themselves have recorded and put on there, and I do not infringe upon their production rights. That I allow them to do that. So for anybody who wants to know anything about me, boy, there's more than enough out there.
Thank you so much for coming back on. We'll have to get you on again. It's always fun. It's always fun to have this talk with you. I would love to talk to you about commercial aircraft. 1011, I flew on one of those as a kid.
Oh, yeah. I flew that all the way through. Let's see. The last time I flew it was in 1997. And shortly thereafter, they started to retire them. It was a much better airplane than the DC-10. But the DC-10 had political connections through Richard Nixon, and so Douglas got the jump off Lockheed off of that. But the aircraft itself was super redundant. It had, for instance, some airplanes have two, maybe three hydraulic systems. The 1011 had five. The airplane itself was built to military specs, and so it was much stronger, much durable, much more technological efficient. The only thing it did is it had so many systems that it required a constant maintenance program that would check on everything in order to maintain certain mechanical efficiencies of it.
They're beautiful, absolutely beautiful planes. All right, sir. Well, thank you very much again for coming on. I appreciate it, and I'll catch you next time. All right,
thank
we'll
you,
get you
Charlotte.
Back on.
You okay. Bet. Thank you so much.
Okay, have a great one.
You too. Bye-bye.
It's always fun to have him on and have these conversations with him. I love it. Okay, tomorrow we're back at 6:30 p.m. Pacific, changing gears a little bit. We're going to be talking about with John Kozik. We're going to be talking about... We're going to be on with John Kozik tomorrow, who is the curator of the Salem Museum of the Ouija Board. And he collects Ouija boards from all over the place. And he has his own theories on what they are, what they do, and how to deal with them, and all that good stuff. So he's going to be on with us tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. Pacific. Thank you guys for coming. I really appreciate it. If you haven't done so already, check out our California Haunts Patreon page. We're doing some really cool stuff over there. And we're going to start up again. As soon as I get my team meeting done, we're going to start up public ghost hunts. At least once a month, we're going to take the public out with us on a ghost hunt. So I hope you guys look forward to that, and especially with the Halloween season coming up. All right, guys, I'll see you tomorrow. If you like the show, share it with five people. If you hated the show, share it with five of your enemies. We are equal opportunities here. We just want to get the show out to other people. All right? See you tomorrow, 6:30 p.m. Pacific. I'd appreciate it. And we're going to be talking about Ouija boards. Have a good one.